Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 304. Welcome back. In the news this week, I've been working on the photos from the 300 event from the TMR Con 2017, the 300 Years of Freemasonry event we had in DC. And you can look for a video that will be coming out probably in the next month or so. Some of the highlights of the show with perhaps some video, but most likely just a really cool slideshow that we'll throw up on YouTube. And I'll be using some of the images you all shared on the Bitly, as well as some photos that were great, and they were taken by Brother Al and Brother Eric. So just want to let you guys know that's coming out. Also, we've got two new contributors over at the Midnight Freemasons. We've got Brother Darren Lanner and also Brother Scott Duball, who are both past masters at this point. I know Scott's got a couple months left, but I'm not sure about Darren, if he's still in the East or not. But nonetheless, two great minds that we've got now on the Midnight Freemasons. Got a great show for you this week. We've got four or five articles. Some of them are shorter, some of them are a little longer, but I think you will like them all. So without any further delays, let's go ahead and get right into it. So the first piece I've got comes from MasonicWorld.com, and it's just a couple paragraphs here. Freemasonry is a fraternity. Freemasonry is the oldest and by far the largest fraternal order in the world. Its lodges stretch around the globe, and like the British Empire, it might well be said that the sun never sets upon the Masonic Lodge. Fraternity means an association of brothers, and that is exactly what Freemasonry is, a society of friends and brothers. The origins of Freemasonry date back to the dawn of civilization. The Egyptians practiced many of the philosophies known to modern Freemasonry, and men practiced many of the operative skills as guilds formed in Europe during the 10th century. Written records of modern Freemasonry have been kept since 1717 with the formation of the general governing body called a Grand Lodge in England. Note, of course, we do know of the 1721 research that has been done, just reading the paper as it stands. Continuing on, it is not a secret society in that its temples are openly marked and almost everyone in the community knows where they are located. The Grand Lodge publishes a roster of the members of every lodge in the jurisdiction. Many of the lodges have individual bulletins or newsletters which carry the names of the officers and members as well. Thus, it is, in the strictest sense of the word, a society with secrets, and these are limited to its obligation, its modes of recognition, such as passes, wards, and grips, etc., and certain parts of the ritual. It is religious in character, but not a religion. It is founded upon the basic principles of brotherhood of man under the fatherhood of God, and everyone who comes to its lodge must express a particular belief about God, for this is the privilege of each individual, and it is not infringed upon by our fraternity. Freemasonry practice selective charities founded on the principle of brotherly need, which is not applicable in all cases that appear similar. No member has a specific claim upon the society for its charity, for it is not a right acquired by becoming a member of the society. Rather, it is a privilege. Now, a couple points about this piece. Of course, 1717, we know 1721 more likely. The line that says, thus, in the strictest sense of the word, a society with secrets, and these are limited to its obligations, modes of recognition, etc., etc. I would differ in that. I think that there are secrets that are not just those things, but they're not intrinsic, they're not specific to Freemasonry. These are schools of thought where the secrets are, to quote a friend of mine, Ray, secrets guard themselves. Freemasonry is a means by which to get those secrets internally as you progress through the degrees and study the philosophies. Now, the last part, Freemasonry practices selective charities, yada, yada, yada. Of course, duly noted that the translation charity is one of the many versions of the word love that exist in the Greek. So, Worshipful Brother Duball has got a wonderful piece that should be coming out soon about the real meaning of brotherly love, justice, and the types of quote-unquote love that exist in the Greek language. For us in English, love is one specific thing. You know, this is kind of derived from the idea of agape, which is God's love, absolute love. But of course, there's eros, there's storge, there's all kinds of different types of love. So pay attention to that. I think that's just like a sidestep within this small piece. Now, next, I know I haven't read anything from the California Freemason in a little bit. Now, I reached out to them and just made sure we had proper authority to go ahead and read some things from their amazing magazine. And of course, as a organization, this is listener-supported education. We don't charge for the show or anything. So they said we're free to go ahead and share these as long as we're giving credit to the magazine. And of course we do. Thank you very much to the California Freemason for all of their work and also to cite the author. So I think this first piece from the California Freemason is very relevant. It is a great piece. Just recently published a month or two ago, maybe 3 months ago, and it's called A Blueprint for Success, Turning a Lodge's Sentimental Value into Real Estate Value. That's right, because so many of us have either lost lodges or might lose a lodge or need to sell some stuff. This is relevant right now. So here we go. Blueprint for Success, Turning a Lodge's Sentimental Value into Real Estate Value by Anthony R.E. Perucci. A lodge has a Masonic meaning, says Shea Magham. It's a place where Masons come together to perform their rituals and share in brotherly love. But he adds wryly, it also has a real estate meaning. Over the last 160 plus years, with lodges in California accumulating a remarkable amount of property, the implications of Masonic Hall's value and its upkeep responsibilities can sometimes take on a life of their own. Some expert advice. As a chairman of the Masonic Properties Committee, Magham, a past master of Sunset Lodge number 369, as well as a licensed engineer, real estate broker, contractor, and attorney, helps Hall associations navigate the complexities of property ownership and maintenance. All property improvements of $25,000 or more must be approved by the committee whose members help Hall association managers make well-informed decisions. Committee members offer a wealth of professional experience in real estate-related fields, and unlike private sector advisors, their professional advice comes at no cost. The Masonic Properties Committee helps mitigate one of the most common challenges of Hall improvements. More often than not, the brothers who serve their Hall Association don't have a formal property management experience. The committee is a resource to help well-intentioned lodges meet their goals. The committee is a source of knowledge for lodges to dig into, says Magham. Last year, we dealt with over 40 cases, from selling property, rentals, dealing with repairs and ordinances, and everything in between. Last year, Grand Lodge extended the Masonic Properties Committee by introducing new real estate services to help lodges better prepare their property improvement proposals before submitting them to the committee for approval. Lodges can leverage the expertise of Director of Real Estate Services Bert Hirschfield, who has more than 25 years of experience in real estate services such as these. Peter Cloven, a member of Live Oak Lodge No. 61 and president of the Oakland Masonic Center, recently worked with Hirschfield regarding a complicated lease negotiation. Quote, Bert knew the processes, he said. He came in with open eyes, a clear heart, and no bias. It was really helpful to have a third party come in and give us input. His real estate background was extremely beneficial, end quote. My value comes from serving as a resource for a Hall association to utilize as it sees fit, Hirschfield says. In some cases, my involvement starts before a plan is developed. In others, I help facilitate applications to the Masonic Properties Committee. Now, a year into his role, Hirschfield has helped many lodges maximize their building's potential while minimizing risk, acting as a source of guidance and wisdom, assets, or burdens. Masonic Halls have become lodges' most financially important asset, and the future of real estate in California looks bright. In Sacramento and Pasadena alone, today's Masonic Halls have an estimated value well into the millions. Even in rural California, the appreciation is notable. Hartley Lodge No. 199 in Lakeport, for instance, built their modest two-story hall in 1907 for less than $20,000, a price that would have been significantly less had the 1906 earthquake not destroyed the half-built structure. In the 1980s, the building was estimated to be worth over $125,000, and today, if the local commercial real estate market is any indication, it is worth closer to $500,000. Despite the long-term value offered by property appreciation, the cost of maintaining a hall has led some lodges to question the need for owning an actual building. When the Downtown Masonic UD opened in Los Angeles, members chose to meet at the LA Athletic Club rather than purchasing a building. Master Chris Holm explains that the fledgling lodge sought a, quote, less burdened approach to Freemasonry, one in which brothers could focus on the more meaningful aspects of their membership. Home is not alone. In 2016, Grand Lodge issued dispensation for 8 new lodges, the most created in a single year since 1958. Not one of those lodges purchased a building in which to meet. They are all renters, either from existing Masonic halls or other venues, says Jordan Yelnick, Director of Member Services and Lodge Development. Still, not many lodges that currently own a hall plan to part with it. The hall experience still looms large in our idea of Freemasonry. A lodge is not just a building, but the building can be an integral part of a lodge. Sales typically only happen when two lodges merge and sell off an extra building, says Magham. He and the Masonic Properties Committee are helping lodges that struggle with their hall's expenses to come up with creative solutions to reduce costs. One is collaborating with another lodge to share the responsibility of owning a building. For lodges with buildings that have been standing for a century or more, it can be very difficult to keep up a landmark structure that has long been an integral thread in the fabric of the neighborhood. Registering these halls as historic landmarks is a solution that can yield tax benefits and a sense of security for the building's future. Ultimately, there is not a quote-unquote one-size-fits-all solution for lodges to determine whether to rent or own the building in which they meet. But through it all, the Masonic Properties Committee and the Grand Lodge Real Estate Services will remain valuable tools for lodges as they navigate the road ahead. What is certain is that whatever good men continue to meet in familiar circumstances or new ones, the vitality of the Masonic fraternity will endure. Now, that's just the first half of this article. The second half is titled Best Practice Strategic Real Estate Plan. Now, I know many Grand Lodges don't have this kind of advice that's out there, and it seems like in the beginning of this piece, maybe it was just about California real estate, but really, this should speak to all of us who serve on a board committee or a temple board or a building board, whatever your case may be. This is applicable, and I think if you guys want to check out the rest of this, please go over to the California Freemason website, which is just cafreemason-digital.com. If you guys want that specific issue, it is the July-August 2017, 300 Years of Freemasonry. Today, 1941-2017 is the title, and should be the first one at the top of the list. So check that out. All right, next is a piece by John P. Rydell. It's called Ritual: Effective Delivery. Now, this is something many of us struggle with. I always say, fake it till you make it. And what I mean by that is, you know, sometimes the words escape us and we have a word that means almost the same thing and we'll use it. And my take on it is, if you can just get those words out there without stumbling over them, that's the goal. If it sounds natural, awesome. But you want to stick to the ritual, but if you mess up a word or two, just keep going. Don't stop. Don't say, oh, sorry, wait a second, let me go back. We need to be effective in that delivery ritual. But let's see what John P. Rydell says. Freemasonry is seriously indebted to those dedicated members of our fraternity who labor for months and years in learning the various elements of ritual. I have often observed, however, that the effort and valuable time spent in memorizing and perfecting these magnificent moral lessons is not always fully exploited. Surprisingly, this is not the result of faulty or halting memory, but rather ineffective delivery. How do we measure the effectiveness of delivery? Quite simply, effective delivery is achieved whenever the candidate or the audience has been able to hear clearly and to reasonably understand the information presented by the speaker. There are 5 elements of delivery or speech. The terms are literally synonymous. They are knowledge of the subject, the speaker's conviction of his message, audibility, pronunciation, and articulation. This might sound like complex literary exercise, but it really isn't. Surely every speaker should know instinctively if he is prepared, if he has adequately memorized and perfected his presentation, and that he himself is committed to the principles of his message. He must also know if he is speaking loud enough and pronouncing his words correctly. What then contributes most to poor speech or delivery? It is articulation. The mechanics of articulation, except perhaps for professionals, is rarely, if ever, obvious to most casual speakers. But lack of attention to this vital element of speech can distance the information and, at times, make it almost unintelligible. Articulation, what is it? It is a term that refers to the movements of the lips, tongue, jaw, and soft palate to form speech and sounds. Good articulation involves production of sounds that are clear and distinct, without being overly precise. Don't confuse pronunciation with articulation. Pronunciation is combining speech sounds into recognizable words. A speaker might survive pronunciation that is unacceptable to an audience. Poor articulation, however, makes a speaker much more difficult to understand, affecting both the attention and comprehension of his listeners. Poor articulation leaves out sounds, distorts sounds, most often by running them together, substitutes one sound for another, and occasionally adds strange sounds. Remember, in a conversation, if poor articulation makes you difficult to understand, the listener can stop you and ask, "What did you say? I didn't understand that." But when you're delivering a lecture, charge, or verse of scripture, that isn't possible. If you aren't understood, the idea is lost because there are no instant replays for the lecture. One note of caution. Don't make the mistake of thinking that you should precisely form every sound. Over-articulation is also poor articulation. Good speech or delivery doesn't call attention to itself. If you said, "I went to the movie last night," and tried to precisely articulate the T in the sentence, your delivery would be unnatural and call attention to itself. In addition, the should be the sound of the. To say the with a long E would overstress the word and would not be natural. By overstressing these sounds, the speaker loses the natural rhythms of speech and creates the perception of insincerity, that he might be more concerned with his image than his message. I suppose that some rituals privately applaud themselves at the completion of a lecture, charge, prayer, or scripture. There was nothing omitted, and they managed to survive the ordeal. But were they effective? Did the candidate and others who were listening hear clearly? Did they reasonably understand the message? If not, it was probably due to poor articulation, speaking too rapidly, distorting words by running them together, overstressing sounds, omitting sounds. It is difficult to understand a speaker under these conditions, especially during the period when a candidate is hoodwinked. He doesn't even have the opportunity to read the lips of the person speaking. All of us are veteran Masons and have been exposed to this quote-unquote ritual stuff many, many times. We've sat through the ceremonies of opening and closing lodges, conferring the 3 degrees, installations, funeral services, much of this rendered almost unintelligible by sloppy speech or poor articulation. But this doesn't bother us because we've heard it so often that we can mentally fill in the gaps left void by the careless speakers. But brethren, can't you just imagine how some of this might sound to new candidates or Masons hearing it for the first time? Remember, if you are not understood, you've wasted your time in delivering the message. You failed to take advantage of the time and effort in learning the work. And even worse, you've left a thoroughly confused listener. All right, I hope you enjoyed that. I thought it was a good piece because many times I will hear people run words together or make up words or whatever. And what ends up happening is, when I say make up words, I said earlier before this piece that that was effective sometimes when you can't think of the proper word. But when I say make up words, like, these are words that aren't even real words. So just something to keep in mind and to think about. And it's okay to practice. Practice in front of somebody. Ask them, "Hey, how did this sound? Was I clear?" Because practice does make perfect. And I think we can all agree that better ritual is always a good thing. All right, now is the point in the show where I'm going to ask you to support the show. So if you haven't already, please head on over to wcypodcast.com, hover over the support the show links, and click on any one of the great things we've got there for our listeners. You can make a direct donation either once, or you can set it up for a monthly donation, either $2, $5, or $10. We have our limited edition shop where you can pick up lapel pins for our program that are exclusive to us. They are $10 and ship anywhere in the United States for $2. We can ship internationally for about $15. It depends on where it's going. If you're in Canada or Mexico and you want a pin and it's going to tell you it's going to cost $15, then please shoot me a private message. You can just send me a direct donation and give me your address and I'll send it and we'll just ship it for the $2. But most of the time, the $15 is because it has to go to Australia or the UK or somewhere in Europe. And it's always $15 to $20. Of course, we also have our partnership with Onnit Labs, so you can check out Alpha Brain or any of the other great products they have. If you use the promo code WCY, you'll get 10% off. And if you go through our links, they send a little bit back to the show. Of course, we have our major sponsor, Bankers Best, which is buybankersbest.com. Use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout. That's 20% off. And if you buy certain products, half the proceeds come back to us. We have WCY and Thrive. So we have a Thrive account also. If that's something you'd like to check out, please click that link for more information. And Of course, we have our producers list there. And if you are somebody who has donated substantial amounts to this show, your name goes up on the wall. We have great brothers like Brother Cates, Quessenberry, Ogiano, Hosler, Harrison, Lakem, Greenlee, Evichin, Craig, Shimian, Knott, Storms, Creason, Langford, James, Sepulveda, Jackson, Mercado, Mullen, Martin, Phillips. These guys have continued to make substantial donations to the program, and we thank them very much. These are the people who have brought this show to you really more than anybody else. This is listener-supported education, and we appreciate all of the help. So again, please check out wcypodcast.com and explore some of the options under support the show. When you support the program, it also gives us the ability to do some extra things sometimes, like we remastered a bunch of Manly P. Hall lectures, and we've got links to that on there too. You hover over From Us to You, you can click on that remastered Manly P. Hall lectures. And what's great is nobody else has these, and we've gotten so many great comments on here about these. This came because Brother Gerald Brown and myself got together and made this happen. He sent me the lectures. I remastered them. They are in 320 kilobyte dual channel constant joint stereo. So this is like nothing you're ever going to hear. This is not the standard versions of these lectures that you will hear on YouTube. These are completely remastered and they're just out there for free. We put them on a Google Drive and there's a direct link to them by clicking on the almost insidious picture of Manly P. Hall that stares out at you from the screen. So click on that and you'll see, I think there's about probably 20 lectures or so, and all of them have been remastered. Lectures like the Book of Enoch, the Solar Christmas 1 and 2, Zodiac and the Great Platonic Year, Astrology and the Universal Cosmology. We have Planets and the Ancient Gods, Great Solar Symbols of the Messiah, the Human Soul through Astrological Cycles, and many other lectures there available for you. Again, all remastered. We've eliminated the white noise and all that kind of stuff. And we're not asking for money for these. So this is literally just a gift from us to you. And we can do these little projects here and there because of the support that you give. So if you like that kind of stuff and you've got a project that you would like us to take on, then perhaps we can do that. Shoot us a message over at admin@wcypodcast.com. And if you'd like to be a sponsor, please send an email out to that as well. And last but not least of our great sponsors, I have to thank brothersblendcoffee.com. So check out those guys as well. Now we'll continue on with the program. All right, our next piece also comes from the California Freemason. This one is the August-September 2016 issue. And this one's called The Masonic Maker. Now, I myself am a lover of trinkets and knickknacks, especially when they're Masonic. And so this article was kind of interesting in that it talks about some of that. And let's just listen in here and give a reading. And I think you guys will understand where I'm coming from with this one and why it kind of speaks to me and countless others. So check it out. The Masonic Maker, contemporary Masonic artisans and visionaries demonstrate that a passion for envisioning and creating artful objects and innovative concepts is alive and well in California Freemasonry, by Mark Frauenfelder. For people who choose to make things, the process is often as important as what is being made. The push to produce something beautiful, something significant, is what brings the creative spirit to life. Making is about being an active participant in the environment in which you live. It's about designing, modifying, and repairing things to suit your needs. And it's about the process of improving the world around you, for yourself, for your family and friends, and for the community. Today's speculative Masons don't typically build cathedrals, but their devotion to the craft and to their fraternity is continuing a legacy of creativity and drive that nods to the past while inspiring generations to come. Each of the Masonic makers profiled in the next four articles will work in completely different mediums. One uses ink and paper, another leather and thread, a third uses bits and bytes, and the final, photography. But their ideas about the creative process and how it is a part of their own journey towards self-improvement is similar. All understand that making things is a deeply rewarding activity, so much so that they have made it their life's work. A Lost Art for a New Century, by Mark Frauenfelder. Walking into the aesthetic union is like going back in time 100 years. Unlike most modern print shops, you won't find much digital technology in this San Francisco Mission District establishment. Instead, you'll see tools of the ancient trade of letterpresses, a type of printing invented by Johannes Gutenberg in the 15th century. The shop is dominated by three letterpress machines, including a cast-iron 1952 Heidenberg cylinder press, made in Germany and lovingly maintained by James Tucker, Junior Deacon of Prometheus Lodge, number 851 in San Francisco, and the Aesthetic Union's proprietor. It's fitting that Tucker looks like he belongs in the heyday of letterpresses. Bearded and bespeckled, he wears a fashionably ink-stained apron with a ruler and mechanical pencil in his pockets. Tucker has a deep appreciation for handcrafts and for the past. Quote, "I wanted to be a graphic designer when I started school," he says, "but I realized I didn't want to sit behind a desk and a computer screen all day. I wanted to make things with my hands." When he learned about letterpresses in 2005 or so, he realized that it was what he had been looking for. Letterpress printing involves applying ink to raised surfaces, such as artwork or letters, then pressing paper on that surface to make a print. Because letterpress printers are complicated and finicky, Tucker says, you have to be part mechanic and part craftsman. To learn the ins and outs of his chosen trade, he's turned to an age-old learning method familiar to masons, an apprenticeship with a local print shop. "I believe in apprenticing and learning from the older generation and then taking what you've learned to do your own thing," Tucker says. Letterpress printing still operates on the apprentice journeyman master system, Tucker explains. "Much like guilds, we usually have a couple of apprentices working in the shop at one time. They get hands-on experience with printing as well as business operations, like client relations and ordering materials. It's a lot to take on in the course of 3 months, compared to the standard 10-year apprenticeships back in the 18th century. There's a lot to learn in a short amount of time," he says. In 2013, Tucker was ready to launch his own shop, but rather than slipping into the wedding invitation trade, as many letterpress operators do, he chose to focus on art books and amazing avant-garde ways of conveying information. His inspiration drew from artists in the past century who, at the advent of the offset printers, began using discarded letterpress printers as a medium for artistic projects. They were attracted by letterpress machines' crisp, distinctive look and a tolerance for thicker textured paper, and how economical it was to acquire them. Artists went to scrapyards and hung out near newspaper print shops to gather old machines and parts, says Tucker. That's when a revolution of small publishing began. Tucker sees his shop as a continuation of that line. It uses old machines, not manufactured anymore, to create new ways to share information and see the world, he says. Printmaking has long been a collaboration between artists without print knowledge and the printers who produce their work. This partnership even helped inspire the Aesthetic Union's name. "I work directly with the artists," says Tucker. "I produce my own designs as well as theirs and help them with the presses." He also offers artist residencies, studio tours, author readings, and other creative-minded events. A master mason since 2013, Tucker says the human-to-human contact and being a better person aspects of Freemasonry, as well as its focus on mentorship, closely parallel his role at the Aesthetic Union. "Right next to my press on my ink cabinet, I have two gifts that were given to me as an entered apprentice in my lodge, a rough and perfect ashlar, a rough stone and a perfect stone. I see them as a reminder of my Masonic goals every day." Now, Mark Fahrenhofer is a research director of the Institute of the Future, editor-in-chief of the CoolTools.org, co-founder of a few magazines, and a longtime contributor and former editor of Wired Magazine. He was the founding editor of Wired.com, and he's also the author of 8 books. If you'd like to hear and see more about these men who are being profiled, I would definitely recommend, again, heading over to the California Freemason Magazine. That's cafreemason-digital.com. I'll have links in the show notes for you to check that out. And again, you'll see several more brothers being profiled after this issue. And this issue, again, was the August-September 2016 issue. So you'll be wanting to check out later editions after this issue. Something I thought about when I thought about these artisan crafters and what they do is Andy Chase. I met Andy Chase for the first time at Masonicon up in Attleboro, Massachusetts. There he was in the super hot upstairs selling his wares. And he had neckties and bow ties and intricate gentlemanly accoutrements that really were fantastic. And not everything he has is Masonic, and that's what I loved, because I think as Freemasons, a lot of us have this kind of unique sense of style, a little something older but classy. And Grip and Word, so if you go to gripandword.com, you'll find the Grip and Word Handmade Haberdashery. This is the sole proprietor, Andy Chase. This is his website. He offers bow ties, ascots, cravats, cufflinks, paper craft. And you can read a little about his story on there by clicking our story. And Andy is a real interesting guy. He has some of the best style I've seen. And he's a real, almost Renaissance man of a sorts. And Andy, if you're listening to the program, thanks for all you do. And I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew about you because, yes, there are great Masonic products out there like bow ties and whatever. We've got some great people that do those, whether that's Edgar Alejandro of Masonic Revival or John Paul Gomez from Fraternal Ties. Grip and Word's a little bit different in that it's not just Masonic. It's some really interesting kind of retro designs, and I love it. So check that website out. And with that, that's it for this week. Please come on back next week, and we'll have a new episode ready for you next Sunday. But in the meantime, please don't forget to check out the Masonic Roundtable at themasonicroundtable.com. Check us out every Tuesday at 10, 9 Central for a live show where we go a live conversation during the program. We interact with the audience as you listen. We're on Hangouts or YouTube is what most people watch us on, I believe. And check it out. The podcast also is available a short time after we go live. And don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And of course, you can look forward to fresh content, also some new perspectives with our 2 newest contributors, Brother Darren and Brother Scott. Thank you both for accepting our invitation to be a contributor, a regular contributor, that is, to one of the biggest and most successful Masonic websites out there. We call it a blog, but it's almost like a magazine now, so please continue to check that out. And thank you to everybody listening to this program, those who make contributions to the program to assist us in our mission for listener-supported education. Again, thank you all so much. I'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.